Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it. Another beautiful day for the Sabbath. Absolutely gorgeous out there. I know we're getting into fall, so let's appreciate the days when we have these gorgeous days. I know we're getting close to the holy days, and I've talked to a few of you. Satan seems to be throwing zingers at a lot of us, and I think a lot of you know that Anita and I had a few zingers thrown at us with the car. All I can say is we know it's going to happen, and hang in there. We know God's blessings are with us. So just if you're getting any zingers thrown at you from Satan, pray to God and hang in there. Well, one of my favorite songs that I used to listen to in the 60s was by a group called 10 Years After. Some of you may or may not be aware of them. The title of the song was, I'd Love to Change the World. And if you would like, that will be the title for today's message. I'd Love to Change the World. Now, I don't need a show of hands, but does anyone in here think that the world in its current state that we're in is perfect? That we don't need any changes? You know, if I would have asked for a show of hands, I don't think I would have gotten any. The outcome would have been the same. No, the world does need changing. We all know that. We all know there's chaos going out there, on out there, and the world needs changing. I mean, look at our own country. We have corruption in government. Today we have political differences, which is okay, but today it's taking us to the point where we're hating each other over those differences. You know, after all of these years and all of these decades, there's still racial strife going on. Big pharmaceuticals and big chemical companies. We know they're pushing products that are bad, and I'll say even deadly, for our health. And we know there's those politicians that turned a blind eye to this going on in order to pad their pockets for their political campaigns. We see people wanting stuff at no cost. We see people with no responsibility for their own lives or trying to better themselves. The blame game is going on. It seems like whatever happens, it's always someone else's fault. So I guess I'll ask again, do we need a change? You know, that's just us here in the U.S. The rest of the world seems to be in even more chaos. You know, Europe has leaned so far socialistic that they're constantly in monetary woes, having to pay for all the programs that they quite frankly can't afford. The borders in Europe are overrun with immigrants from other countries, immigrants that don't want to assimilate into the country that they're coming to. And what's ironic, mind-blowing, is a lot of these immigrants want to bring in the values, the customs, and ideas that they just escaped from. It doesn't make sense, does it? The world is in chaos. It needs changing. We look at North Korea. We look at Venezuela. We look at many countries in Africa. Those are countries that are being ruled by a dictatorship. They're causing hardships for the people, causing hunger, and poverty, diseases, incarceration, death for a vast majority of their citizens. And there's always constant cloud of wars in a lot of these countries as people fight over political issues, religious issues, cultural issues, in the Middle East, tribal issues. You know, the main thrust of the song, I'd Love to Change the World, pertained, obviously, to all the world troubles that were going on in the 60s. The song, and rightfully so, the song at that time was somewhat about the Vietnam War. They do mention racial inequality in that song, poverty, hatred, greed. And yes, they even downplay or downgrade the sexual deviance that was going on at that time. You know, you'll hear from time to time, and quite often, how terrible the 60s were. That they were the start of the downfall of this country. Well, just for a few moments, I'd like to offer maybe a little bit different view of that decade. I'm not going to defend the decade. We all know that there were problems. There was a lot of negatives from that era. You know, drugs had gotten out of hand, the use of psychedelic drugs and other forms of drugs. Sexual promiscuity at that time was unleashed. Not that it always wasn't happening, but it became much more rampant during the 60s. There was a general rebellion against authority. You know, a lot of these protests that you saw were funded by anarchists, people that just wanted to have the country in turmoil. There were professional protesters out to incite riots. Me being a Kent State graduate, I missed the Kent State shootings by 1 year, but I had friends in school at the time and in the Guard, the National Guard at the time, and there were hundreds of people that weren't even from Kent State. They bust them in just to incite riots. You know, young people at that time wanted a change, and as we said, it was needed. Unfortunately, they sought it without God's guidance. You know, some of the areas of protest were positive. Again, we talked about protesting against the Vietnam War. You know, people were tired of continual conflicts that we had in this country. World War I, World War II, Korean War, Vietnam War. Constantly in a state of conflict, and young people being sent to die without really knowing what the true meaning of that war was. In a lot of cases, it was obscure. They had no say-so. You're drafted, you go and fight. Young men had decades of not being able to plan their future without the cloud of the draft and war hanging over their heads. Racial inequality at that time. Definitely change was needed, especially in the South. We all saw it, we all knew it existed, but the 60s brought protests to bring it to the forefront. And if you remember, and I do, you saw protests of whites and blacks marching arm in arm to bring about that change. Was it pretty? No, it wasn't. But it brought to head things that needed change. People were saying, we've had enough. You know, if you remember the mantra at that time, it was peace. You either had the two fingers for peace. A lot of times you saw the peace sign, the circle with the supposed dove's feet in it. The dove itself was a symbol of peace. They were all trying to point us in the direction of everyone just getting along with each other. Cut out the wars. No more wars. No more racial hatred. That was the goal. Did it work? I guess I'll have to say no. You know, we've had no more drafts since Vietnam. And even though the news wants to make you think different, racial inequality has drastically improved. You know, there's still racial strife. It'll probably always be there. And we see a lot of that is driven by politicians vying to maintain their status and to get reelected. You know, the intent of the 60s was good. But, unfortunately, without God's direction, the people, the young people, weren't really sure what to do. The chorus to the song I just mentioned, the chorus goes something like this. I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do. Is that true for us? Would we know what to do? If God appeared in a loud voice before the whole world and said, Mitch Showers, you're in charge of the entire physical world, would I know what to do? I maybe a little bit, but I can guarantee you not. I can guarantee you I would fail. Let's make it easier for conversation. If God appeared before the entire world in a booming voice and said, United Church of God, North Canton, Ohio, you're in charge of changing the entire physical world. It needs to be changed drastically. Would all of us in here know what to do? Well, we might say, well, that's easy. All we do is we just institute all the commands that God put forth, all the precepts, all the instructions that are in the Bible. Everything will run smooth, right? Who are we kidding? We can't even keep turmoil and disagreement out of God's true church. And I can guarantee you, if everybody in this room was in charge of changing the world, it wouldn't be long before we had some minor disagreements. We're human. It's going to happen. You know, we don't have every little nuance, every little minute detail to go on. These words were given to us for knowledge. But God also gave us a human mind for discernment. And we're told to come to Him for understanding. If we didn't need the understanding, everything was clear, we wouldn't have to ask God for understanding. So no, it's tough, even within the church, to come to total agreement. And I have to ask, if a man or a woman could successfully run the world, why hasn't it happened? Adam and Eve had the situation for a perfect utopia as God wanted. How long did that last? Noah and his family had the perfect opportunity to start over. Eight people is all you had to concentrate on to establish a way of life consistent with God's instruction to change the world. How long did that last? You don't have to turn here. I'm going over to Genesis 10, and I'm going to read verses 8 and 9. Cush begot Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore it is said, like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. This is what the people were spouting. This is what the people were saying. Like Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. The problem is the word before should be translated instead of. Nimrod put himself, because he was a mighty warrior and people looked up to him, he put himself in place of God. And you know what happened, the Tower of Babel, the city of Babel. So you had eight people escaping, having the opportunity to change, to set up a new system. How long did it last? Ham to Cush to Nimrod. Three generations. And it fell apart. And we can sit here and say, well, it's been a long time since the days of Adam and Eve and Noah. You know, we've had centuries to get it right. Just out of curiosity, I downloaded forms of government from Wikipedia. Here's the list I printed off. 17 pages of different types of government structures that humans have tried. Surely one out of those 17 pages had to be the perfect one. I don't think we've seen it yet, have we? I don't think that's the case. You know, we look at the splits in our church, and sure, some of them were based on doctrine. You know, the original split with Worldwide, it had to happen because of the heresy of the doctrine being brought in. But I can guarantee you that most of the splits that have happened after that were driven by pride or ego or power. okay? If you're not going to agree with me, I'm going to take my ball and go home. You know, every form of worldly governance has been tried to bring out the perfect utopia. We can't do it. We try, but we're human. I love to change the world, but I don't know what to do. There's one more line in the chorus of that song. I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do, so I'll leave it up to you. So who do we leave it up to? Turn over to Hebrews, Hebrews 7. Hebrews 7, and we will start in verse 11. Now, we're going to be talking a little bit in here about Melchizedek. You could give a whole sermon on who Melchizedek was. I guess for brevity, we all know that Melchizedek was the word of the Old Testament that was to become Jesus Christ, without elaborating too much. But in verse 11, therefore, if perfection were through the Levitical priesthood, if that human priesthood was perfect, for under it the people received the law, obviously, if that priesthood was perfect, what further need was there for another priest, and we know that would be Jesus Christ, should rise according to the order of Melchizedek and not be called to the order of Aaron. So he's called not from a human priesthood, but a, lack of a better word, a heavenly priesthood. Verse 12, for the priesthood being changed, there's a change, of necessity there is also a change of the law. Some changes going on. 13, for he of whom these things are spoken belongs to another tribe from which no man has officiated at the altar. For it is evident that our Lord arose from Judah, of which tribe Moses spoke nothing concerning the priesthood. Christ did not come from the tribe of Levi. He came from the tribe of Judah. He didn't come from the human or the Levitical priesthood. Verse 15, and it is yet far more evident if, in the likeness of Melchizedek, there arises another priest who has come, how's he come? Not according to the law of fleshly commandments, the physical, but according to the power of an endless life. For he testifies, you are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. That verbiage came from Psalms 110, verse 4. Sometime when you have a chance, Psalm 110 talks about the announcement of the Messiah's reign. It's interesting how that ties in. 18, for on one hand, there is an annulling of the former commandment because of its weakness and unprofitableness. For the law made nothing perfect. On the other hand, there is the bringing in of a better hope through which we draw near to God. Another word for the law made nothing perfect is the law made nothing complete. The law in, by itself is good. It teaches us how to live our lives. But it wasn't complete. It didn't give us a hope or a chance for salvation. Verse 20, and inasmuch as he was not made priest without an oath, for they have become priests without an oath, but he with an oath by him who said to him, the Lord has sworn and will not repent. You are a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. By so much more, Jesus has become a surety of a better covenant, a change that took place. And there were many priests in verse 23 because they were prevented by death from continuing. I mean, that makes sense. There maybe was a good priest, but he's human. He's going to die. Christ is not. 24, but he, because he continues forever, has an unchangeable priesthood. Therefore, he is also able to save to the uttermost those who come to God through him, since he ever lives to make intercession for them. Uttermost. Therefore, he also is able to save, another way to say that is completely. Or another translation would be forever. He is able to save forever those that come through God, to God through him. Levitical priesthood couldn't do that. 26, for such a high priest was fitting for us, who is holy, harmless, undefiled, separate from sinners, and has become higher than the heavens. Since he was holy and innocent, verse 23, who does not need daily, as those high priests, to offer up sacrifices first for their own sins or his own sins, and then for the people's. For this he did once for all when he offered up himself. Verse 28. For the law appoints as high priests men who have weaknesses. They're human. They're like us trying to make the change. We're human. We have faults and weaknesses. But the word of the oath, which came after the law, appoints the Son, Jesus Christ, who has been perfected forever. Again, there was nothing wrong with the law. It just fell short. And there was time for a change. You know, we have weaknesses. Christ does not. He not only knew what to do, he had the power to do it. He ushered in a new and better covenant, a change that will allow us access to God's glorious kingdom, a kingdom that God created from the beginning of time. So we're physical. We can't change the entire physical world and do it with perfection. Do we just sit back and leave it up to God and Jesus Christ? Well, quickly, let's look at Romans 10. Romans 10 and verse 14 and 15. Romans 10, verse 14. How then shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in him of whom they've not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? And how shall they preach unless they are sent? As it is written, and I love this, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the gospel, who bring glad tidings of good things, or the good news. That's our job. We are supposed to preach the gospel. Yeah, we leave the changes up to God and Jesus Christ, but we have a job to do. And it's not like it's, okay, we have to preach the gospel because that's our job. Does God appreciate? How beautiful are the feet of those who preach the gospel? And that basically came from, I'm just going to turn back here. You don't have to if you don't wish to. Isaiah 52. I'll read just verse 7. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him who brings good news, who proclaims peace, who brings glad tidings of good things, who proclaims salvation, who says to Zion, your God reigns. Nahum 1:15. Again, you don't have to turn there. B. Behold on the mountains the feet of him who brings good tidings, who proclaims peace. O Judah, keep your appointed feast, perform your vows, for the wicked one shall no more pass through you. He is utterly cut off. You know, it's our job to preach the gospel, and it's appreciated. You know, even if we can't change the hearts of mankind, we are directed to spread the word, to spread the good news of God's coming kingdom. We are to be a testament of his calling, not only being first fruits of his plan, which we're looking at here in the fall holy days, but by doing the job we were given to do. Are we going to be first fruits if we don't do that job? And we can do that job simply by supporting the church's efforts. We're told to be a light so others can see us, what a godly way of life should be. And you should be ready to defend your calling in case somebody has any questions. You know, God and Jesus Christ can completely change the world. We can't. But we can do what we're appointed to do, to bring the word to as many as will listen. And we all know God does the calling. You know, God's change is for all mankind. All we can do is educate. What we need to remember, we need to educate out of love and concern. Time's drawing short. We have to do it while we have the time to do it. And just as important, we cannot become frustrated by our own expectations and time frame. You know, God is working out his plan, a very methodical and in a step-by-step process. Sometimes we want to interject our own thoughts and time frame into that. You know, we want to change the world. We want to preach the gospel. But language and cultural differences sometimes makes that difficult. You know, English just doesn't translate word for word. We know when reading the Bible from either Greek or Hebrew into English, there's some literary license taken. It just doesn't translate correctly over. You know, there's subtle differences in language all over the world, and we're supposed to get to other people and preach the gospel. I know in Thai, we go to Thailand quite a bit, you have to be careful because a lot of the greetings and different things are gender specific. If you're saying hello, Anita would say sadika, I would say sadikat. Or kap kum ka would be thank you for Anita, or kap kum kap would be for me. If you said it different, somebody's going to look at you a little bit strange. And just subtle differences in language. We know in North America, when we talk about a napkin, it's something we wipe our mouth with when we're eating. In Britain, a napkin is a diaper for a baby. So can you imagine from, you know, would you like a napkin? Well, no, I don't want a napkin if you're giving it to somebody in Europe. There is subtle differences. You know, and eventually, we can look forward to it, but not now, there will be a pure language, so this will not be applicable. And culture. In America, we're more, whether some people aren't, we're more goal and results oriented. We plan normally for a predetermined outcome. We look forward to and plan to be in God's kingdom. A good portion of the rest of the world isn't like that. They're more existential in nature. They're free to do what they want, to live only in the moment. In Thailand, there's a saying, Amanda, I hope I've got the pronunciation right. Mai Pen Rai is a big saying over there. Mai Pen Rai means I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it later. And that's how people live. So to get, because of those cultural differences, for us, what seems like, okay, here's the plan, accept it. It's almost difficult to do. Or worse yet, if a country is totally controlled by the government and no chance for thoughts and dreams, how do we explain an ultimate goal to those people? Imagine trying to get the message of the gospel to sink in to generations that have experienced no hope or no clue how to better their lives. It's hard to do. It takes training. And again, we cannot become discouraged. Matthew. Matthew 24. Matthew 24, we'll start in verse 15. Verse 15, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. And verse 16 and 21 talks about fleeing. I won't read all of it. Get out of there. You're supposed to flee. Verse 22, and unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days were shortened. That's for you and I, that those days would be shortened. Verses 23 through 28, for lack of time, talks about the false Christs, the false prophets, the false teachings. And in verse 29, immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn. And they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. That sweet sound of the trumpet, as we just concluded trumpets. You know, there will be great tribulation. There will be false Christs. They will profess that they have all the knowledge. And even worse, they will profess that they are the intercessors to God, and you can only come to God through them. And there'll be false prophets deceiving people. But the change will come. It won't come from us humans, but from God and Jesus Christ. You know, there is a change that is yet to take place. A change that will happen. And it's one that all of us will be a part of. It's one that we can definitely look forward to, one that we will be celebrating in these fall feasts. Turn over to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 15, we're winding down here. 1 Corinthians 15, let's read verses 51 and 52. I think we all know these by heart. 15:51. Behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. A change we can look forward to. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, for the trumpet will sound, and the dead will raise incorruptible, and we shall be changed. That sweet sound of the trumpet and that sweet change we can look forward to. Skip to verse 57. But thanks be to God, who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Change is not going to come by my efforts or your efforts. We'd love to change the world, but for us, it probably is not going to happen. We cannot do it. And you think about, we're going to be celebrating atonement, and, you know, we look at, okay, why can't we change the world? And one of the reasons is because Satan is always out there interfering. And you look at atonement, and isn't it amazing? Even with Christ returning, Satan is still going to have his influence. He's still going to be deceiving. The key is, he needs to be put away for good. You know, as I said, you know, everybody wants change, and we'd love to see it done today. We'd love to see this world be perfect, but with Satan deceiving the world, excuse my grammar, it ain't going to happen. Not with my effort or your effort. Us little humans can't do it. We're not going to change the entire world. God and Jesus Christ can. Let's conclude with some beautiful verses over in Revelation. We can think about these during the Feast of Tabernacles. I'm sure they'll be mentioned during the Feast of Tabernacles. Revelation 21. Revelation 21, and we'll just start in verse 1. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth. I saw a changed heaven and a changed earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. Also, there was no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of the heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying, and there shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. Then he who sat on the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. That glorious change that we all want. And he said to me, Write, for these words are true and faithful. And he said to me, It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give of the fountain of the water of life freely to him who thirsts. He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. Skip over to verse 9. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls filled with seven last plagues came to me and talked with me, saying, Come, I show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. That's us. And he carried me away in spirit to a great and high mountain, and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God. Skip over to verse 22. And I saw no temple in it. There's no need for a physical temple in the New Jerusalem. Why? For the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb, Jesus Christ, are its temple. There's no need for that physical temple anymore. And the city had no need of sun or of moon to shine in it, for the glory of God illuminated it. And the Lamb is its light. And the nations of those who are saved shall walk in its light. And the kings of the earth bring their glory and honor into it. Its gates shall not be shut at all by day. There shall be no night there. So those gates are always open. And they shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it. I'd love to change the world, but I don't know what to do. So God and Jesus Christ, I'll leave it up to you.